Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Final hour of the show. Darren, Donick, and Chase here from Pete and Terry's Tavern. And it looks like we are getting a call from over on the Vanderbilt campus. We should have Coach Derek Mason here in just a moment. We've got the Predators and the Sharks tonight. Sharks at 0-3, angry, desperate, ready to go. We'll talk a little bit more about that matchup. Tough time to face a very, very tough Sharks team that has not had the success early in the season they're looking for. No big changes to the Predators lineup, it looks like, tonight. We'll get into that a little bit later. But as we do every Tuesday on the show, at this time, we talk to Vanderbilt head coach Derek Mason. Coach, thanks for joining us today.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Good to be on the show.
Well, Coach, I know it was not what you wanted on Saturday night, but nothing you can do about it now. Although what you always say is you really find out how your team's character is and how they handle stuff like this. So how did you try to approach it? How did the guys come into work as they move forward in this one?
Yeah, you know, getting past this game is something that they had to do. Remember, we actually had a chance to watch the film together. You know, offense, defense, special teams, you know, as units, because I think you can go into your individual position room and you know, man, look at the issues and you say, okay, well, you know, man, I just missed this. Okay, man, it's okay. But I think when you get everybody in a room together and you start talking about the peer accountability, okay, and what happens and, you know, where did this start? Okay, man, stemming from practice? Is this stemming from the idea that, you know, we're not being greedy enough every day in terms of getting what we can, you know, with the opportunities and reps that we get? You know, do my practice habits need to change so my game habits become better? All those things are, you know, a part of what I needed to do and wanted to do on Sunday. And I think these guys took it that way. So today, you know, I come out and guys, they're greedy. I mean, you know, if the individuals can get better, the team gets better. Okay, everybody doesn't get better at the same time. So, man, you have to put the onus on guys to understand how you have to be selfish and somewhat greedy in this in terms of seizing the opportunity and then, you know, man, make it happen. And that's how we came into the Tuesday, and that's the way we came off the field.
In your assessment, as you analyze the film, I think we all see the players that you have on offense and know that there's something better there. So what in your mind is missing right now offensively?
It's timing. It's chemistry. It's you know, awareness and really just, you know, man, guys being able to be, you know, synchronized in this process. I mean, there's no the timing right now is just off. And, you know, when it happens, it's going to explode. But we need it to happen now. And so, I mean, you're sort of, you know, stuck in this vacuum where, you know, you got to keep tinkering because the answers aren't big. Okay, like the answers are small. A couple guys doing their job, you know, man, right read, guys straining to finish on a block, you know, a third down completion here. Okay, staying cool and calm in the moment so we can just go ahead and punch it in the end zone. I mean, it's little, but it's big in terms of the scope. So, you know, those things are sort of being, you know, been shined on a little bit. The lights, you know, been big and bright. And what we got to do, man, is fix it. And that's what, you know, I mean, our goal is, you know, get the job done. So let's do it.
You were asked about your quarterback situation. You had some interesting things. And I 100% get it because when you have a starting quarterback, you want that quarterback to play and not worry if he makes a mistake that he could be coming out. And at the same time, you want to have competition. You have you have results that you've got to get from whoever is playing at any position. So tell people what you how you're approaching it this week with Riley Neal and Deuce Wallace.
Well, I'm approaching it with those guys, you know, and going into practice and you know, man, getting these reps and making sure, man, that these reps look the way they need to look. I mean, Riley goes out there, man, he's going to get, you know, X number of reps. Deuce is going to go out there and get X number of reps. And you know what? I'm looking for all of it. I'm looking for not only, you know, man, the footwork, the ability to manage it, the ability to be accurate, you know, man, the sort of charisma and passion that it takes to play the position, the authoritative, you know, man, stance that a guy has to be able to take in terms of getting his guys and holding his guys accountable. And if they can't do it in practice, they're not going to do it in games. So, man, if there's a shift in what that looks like, then there may be a change. But if there's no shift, then there is no change. So, man, we're going to continue to keep getting those guys better, tailoring the offense to what our best players do. Tailoring, not to just fit the quarterback, but tailoring the offense to fit our best players. And then, and then the guy who can make that come alive is the guy that's getting it done. So that's where we're going.
Derek, is sometimes when you're looking at especially the quarterback position and you're thinking, okay, do I need to make a change? Is sometimes it just more than the individual player, and it's just what you were going about saying with the offense and getting everybody on the same page? Of sometimes change just sparks something in a team. It's almost like we're here at the Preds, and sometimes you pull the goaltender, even though it's not the goaltender's fault, but it sparks something with the rest of the team.
Yes, that's exactly what you're looking for. Hey, look, I mean, I've had the opportunity, you know, man, some people have asked me, well, you know, man, Deuce has gone in late, like in the ball game. Like, do you think it's different going in late, you know, as opposed to going in early? I said, yeah, I mean, of course it's different, but, you know, do we always get a chance to figure out what our opportunity is? You know, when you go out there, it's do you light a spark or don't you? It's whether or not does the game significantly change because of your presence under center, okay, on the field, okay, how you manage the game, the passion by which you play. I mean, does it truly look different? And that's what you're always trying to determine. So, like, for me, I mean, I don't want to go through the exercise, at any point in time, at any position, change just to have change. Because change just to have change isn't good enough. What you need, man, is change that pushes you over the threshold. And right now, okay, man, I need that, you know, like from the quarterback, man, that's Riley Neal. And if Deuce Wallace, you know, like provides competition to that and can take that over, well then, you know, man, I need to make a different decision. But I'm not at that point today. I know where I sit today.
Coach Derek Mason of Vanderbilt here with us on Darren Donick and Chase. And Coach, I've said this to you before, and I'll say it again. One thing I like about you is how honest you are. And I can tell as you sit here talking to us, you know, there's some frustration in your voice of how things have gone. What are you seeing out of your team mentally that kind of shows you that they're feeling the same thing you're feeling right now?
You mean, you think it's frustration. I mean, it's disappointment. Okay, man, but passion. Okay, so, I mean, like, for me, I feel like this football team, man, is right on the cusp of doing something great. But sometimes, you know, like, you got to go through the murkiness, okay, man, of the journey, man, in order to get to the other side. So, I mean, as you look at the journey, man, I'm looking at this journey, and I'm just telling these guys, we're there. You know, everything that I'm talking about is minute. Okay, man, it's small. But if we can take care of the little things, the big things will take care of themselves. You know, little things like tackling. Tackling seems to be little, man, but it's a big thing because it's something that's plaguing us. Protection, okay? Sounds little, man, but it's big in the grand scheme of timing. So, you know, in all this, man, again, it's about having a sense of urgency, okay, man, and that's where I'm at today. I'm urgent, okay. I'm on the radio talking to a group of men who understand the game, who get the game, but understand that it can't happen a week from now. It needs to happen today.
UNLV comes to town this weekend, Coach, and obviously a team you don't see a lot. What do you know about them? What have you learned so far?
Well, I mean, spread offense, man, they got a running quarterback, man, they got a throwing quarterback. You know, Tim Skipper, you know, who's their offense coordinator, you know, man, I've known for a while. You know, man, Skip is going to, you know, man, try to make sure he puts his guys in position offensively to you know, push the ball down the field. Man, they've got, you know, man, a really good running back who I think, you know, man, can present problems, like in the run game, and he's physical, he's fast on the edges. And then defensively, you know, man, they give you a lot of different looks. They're 3-4, they're 3-3-5, you know, man, they're 4-2-5. They do a lot of different things, and I think with that, you know, it's about our rules. This game is going to be more about us than it is about UNLV. You know, we can't chase what they do. We got to fix what we do, do what we do well, and the Commodores will find its way.
Coach, thank you very much for joining us, as always, and good luck Saturday against the Runnin' Rebels.
Thank you so much. Anchor down.
All right. How many times does a football team play the Rebels. Two weeks in a row? You got the Ole Miss Rebels and then the UNLV Runnin' Rebels. That's got to be rare.
I meant what I said to him, that he is honest, and I can hear it.
He's honest,
I mean,
he's passionate, but he knows it's got to be better. Yeah. He knows it's got to be better than it's been. So on the other side, let's talk about that. And Max is going to join the conversation. He does the Anchor Down podcast, so he really gets deep into the into the details on what is happening out there. And I know it is coming up. I mean, I saw it. And, of course, they played right up against the Predators game. So I did not watch the game live. I've gone back through.
Yep.
But I think the question is coming up. And you know this happens on social media, the overreaction. But just how much pressure is on Derek Mason now? I think the fans know it's got to be way better. He knows. Everybody does. But if it doesn't get better, what happens? These are the things that people start speculating on. So we'll talk about that on the other side. Remember, at 1:45, we're going to draw for our next pair of tickets to the Predators game tonight. And at 1:30, we will talk about the matchup, Predators and Sharks. And then we'll draw the tickets in the last segment of the show. So we're at Pete and Terry's Tavern, Sobro entrance between 5th and 6th Avenue on DeMumbry. Just walk up, drop your name in that. You could win a pair of tickets to tonight's game. Stay tuned. We're coming back. Hey, Predator fans, don't forget Smashville Live returns tomorrow night. Hosted by Braden Gall, live from Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. That's located at 1855 Galleria Boulevard from 7 to 8. This week's guest, Kyle Turris and Dan Hamhuis. And so go on out, meet those guys. First 50 people will have the opportunity to get an autograph or picture. Smashville Live is brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka, Spring Hill Heating and Cooling, and Red Spirits and Wine. So looking forward to the show every Wednesday this week. Predators in action tonight against the Sharks. We've got another ticket drawing coming up at 1:45. We call upon Max Hurst, the host of the Anchor Down podcast, specializes in Vanderbilt athletics. And, of course, Max, as you know, that was I like the words that Mitch Light used earlier, alarmingly uncompetitive against Ole Miss, a team that you absolutely thought you should stand and should be able to at this stage of Derek Mason's tenure, the expectation level, you have to be able to go down there and do better than that. They did not. So where do they go from here?
Well, before that, Willie, I would like to alarm you with this great stat in answer to your question about Vandy facing the Runnin' Rebels back-to-back weeks in Ole Miss and UNLV. In 2016, late October, early November, Vanderbilt faced TSU, Auburn, and Missouri in three straight games. That is three straight Tigers, which was just a momentous occasion. And they'll have two Tigers this year, too, LSU and Missouri, but not back-to-back.
I would say over the years, your percentage chance of playing Tigers, at least back-to-back, is pretty good in a given year, but the Rebels probably not so much.
Yeah, well, if you're
especially the Runnin' Rebels.
Yeah, if you're seeking out a non-conference Tiger, then that is going to change things, too. That's going to up your percentage.
So, Max, let's talk, you know, just first big picture, right, before we get into details as to why things are happening. What do you think is the realistic heat check right now or misery index? I know there's a lot of howling among the Vanderbilt fans. They were not happy at all, nor should they be, with that effort. And you look ahead and you're like, okay, if you can't beat Ole Miss, then where do you do the math and get to 6-7 wins, which is the expectation level?
Right, and I still think Vanderbilt will beat Kentucky at home. That is, I mean, I think we said this last week, that is by far Vanderbilt's most likely SEC win, even coming into Ole Miss. I still think Vanderbilt would win that game even in their current state. But I think it's interesting because, obviously, Mitch gets better access to the team than I do as the sideline reporter, traveling with the team, truly being on the sidelines with them. But my big concern coming out of this game was the defense and the big plays, because they played well, and I think it's a defense that could tackle well. If you look kind of individual by individual, they have some very good tacklers on this team, but there were some missed tackles on those big, big runs. The two runs early on in the third quarter of 75 yards or longer, Vanderbilt did not defend the zone reads well, and it cost them big time.
I have thought that has been a problem throughout the season, is the tackling on defense, and also their inability to cover teams that have, you know, a good passing attack, if you will. And Ole Miss is not one of those teams. And so it's a big concern, I think, going forward. They should be okay this weekend, but they have got to find a way to change the narrative here.
Well, it's even worse because exactly what you're saying, Ole Miss wasn't passing in this game. John Rhys Plumlee ran the ball 22 times. He threw 18 passes. I mean, this was a run-first game. It was a zone-read game. It was quarterback-keeper. It was involving the three running backs, and Vanderbilt just couldn't follow the ball. It was bad. I mean, we hear Jason Tarver's big mantra, second year as the D coordinator, the ball is everything. Well, on one of those two long runs, on the Jerry and Ely run, which I believe was 78 yards. I got the notes here somewhere. Yeah, 78 yards, the touchdown at the start of the third quarter. I mean, it was his own read, and Kenny Hebert was in. I mean, he blew it up. He was there at the mesh point, but he didn't follow the ball. He didn't decide between the quarterback and the running back. Ely took the ball. Hebert didn't really get either of them. 78 yards later, Ole Miss is up 17-6.
Now, the thing that, from a league perspective, if you ask the guys on the SEC network, what's the deal with Vanderbilt? The first thing that they're going to say is, okay, you got Keyshawn Vaughn, yeah. You got Jarek Pinkney, you got Kalijah Lipscomb. How do they not score a touchdown against Ole Miss? So, Max, what is your answer to that question? What's going wrong?
This should be good.
Yeah, they aren't using Jarek Pinkney, I guess is my answer to that. He had one catch in this game. Unfortunately, we don't get target numbers for games on the road. Vanderbilt stats do include targets that we've been getting. The road teams have not been including in what we've been sent. I was not in the press box for this game. I was there as a fan, so I was not keeping diligent target notes, but he only had one reception.
What were you doing?
Couldn't have possibly been targeted more than four or five times, but yeah, it was he's just not involved. It's odd, and we heard from Derek Mason last week that they can't involve him because the offense isn't putting long enough drives together. Well, Cam Johnson was still targeted nine times in the Northern Illinois game when Pinkney was targeted twice, and now Cam Johnson didn't play much in this game and is now listed on the depth chart as the backup to C.J. Bowler in the third receiver spot. So I don't know what happened there either, on a separate note.
You know, it's as you say that, one thing that comes to mind, and a lot of people are honing in on this on the various, you know, the websites who cover Vanderbilt exclusively. You know, they went with a new offensive coordinator, and it's ironic because Andy Ludwig took a lot of heat last year, right? They weren't always – but Andy Ludwig – definitely had his moments, definitely had a lot of experience. You have a new guy this year who has been on the staff, but just it's a little bit like the Arthur Smith, right? You got to earn your stripes when you get the promotion. And so far for the Vanderbilt offense, it hasn't happened yet. So, Max, your thoughts on the new offensive coordinator?
Yeah, I'm going to bring up another thing that Mitch Leitz said in the 12 o'clock hour. I think he's right to point out the muffed kickoff return by Justice Shelton Mosley, who, by the way, I think Shelton Mosley has been very, very good for Vanderbilt this year. This was a rare mistake for the grad transfer kick returner and speedy wide receiver from Harvard. But he bobbled that kickoff. Vandy starts at the 7, already down 3-0. That's a tough spot for the offense. And, oh, by the way, a false start before the first snap from scrimmage sends them half the distance to the goal back to the 4. So that was a tough spot for Jerry Godowski to kind of deal out of. And by the time they got the ball back again in standard field position, they were down 10-0. So I don't think the offensive play calling was a problem this game. There were some drives, actually the third offensive drive, or the second offensive drive, sorry, right after Vandy went down 10-0, they went for it on a couple of third and shorts, and they got them. And then after going for it on third and one at their own 34, or sorry, fourth and one at their own 34, and fourth and two on their own 44, they bring the offense out after spending a timeout on 4th and 12 at the opponent's 43, and then Riley Neal punts the ball. And I don't think that's the offensive coordinator's call, obviously. That's a head coach call, especially out of a timeout. But I don't know. I think those are the drives when Vanderbilt had a chance to be competitive, and I don't think play calling was the biggest problem there.
I just think some of it is, you know, I mean, listen, the offensive coordinator's going to draw up the plays. He's going to call the plays. They're just not using the big three the way they need to be used. And I don't know if that's because the quarterback just can't execute it right, or if it's they don't have time on the offensive line. I mean, you have Kalijah Lipscomb and Jarek Pinkney. I don't understand why they're not being more – they're being used more, or why they're not more productive. I mean, Keyshawn Vaughn is what Keyshawn Vaughn is, but it just it is mind-boggling to me. And I don't know if you switch to Deuce Wallace if that really changes anything.
Yeah, I think people thought going in, Ole Miss would do everything they could to make it hard for Keyshawn Vaughn to run. But that's where, going into the season, you thought, all right, if teams do that, you should have enough to be able to burn, especially a team like Ole Miss that is not a vaunted, unbelievable defense. So that all leads us to this final point I want to ask you guys. I'll give you my take on the hot seat level for Derek Mason. I think if David Williams were still alive, still the athletic director, we knew his mentality backwards and forwards. He was always supportive and as patient as anybody could possibly be. especially with guys that he really believed in. And so if that were the case, then I don't think Derek Mason, even if they stumble this year and fall short of expectations, which I say is now 6-6. That's your expectation every year. If you miss it one year, that's not the end of the world, right? But this is year six. The first couple years were rebuilding, basically. Even though they had come off the James Franklin years, the cupboard was bare. He's had a couple of pretty good seasons. The wins over Tennessee have been very good. This could be a step back here. I think if it were David Williams, absolutely back next year. Yep. No, hands down, no issues. You do wonder about Malcolm Turner and how he sees things, because it's different, especially after what happened with Bryce Drew. So that's where I sit. I still think that I'd be stunned if he's not back next year, unless they completely get whitewashed the rest of the year, don't win a game in the SEC. Then I think, you know, it's gonna get pretty hairy for sure. But it would be a big financial commitment to do what they did with Bryce Drew, and then all on top of that, go down that road with the football coach, who they would owe a lot of money.
Yeah, and
you guys tell me if you agree or disagree.
No, I agree with you, because, you know, they did just buy out the basketball coach, so that's on there. He got the extension. I think it all depends on how they play down the stretch, because if you look at the remaining games on this schedule, I identify probably five games in which they could win. Is that fair?
Yeah.
4 to 5. UNLV this weekend is one of those. Missouri, I don't see.
Well, do we know if Kelly Bryant's going to play in that game or not? That's two weeks away.
That's true.
And even so, I think Missouri is still a pretty good team, but you're at home. I mean, that, to me, the program should be at a level that when Missouri comes to town, you have a shot to win.
South Carolina, at South Carolina, is another one of those that, okay,
they're going to win that. But let's be realistic. They're going
to
be a 7 to 10 point underdog in that game, for sure.
At Florida, I don't give much of a chance. Kentucky is one that you could.
You got to win that game.
East Tennessee State should win for sure.
And then Tennessee. You've shown the ability to go win there. We'll see where Tennessee is. But so, Max, with the athletic director change, what do you think that does to the pressure on Derek Mason?
I think there are two factors at play here, and I think you're right to make a comparison to Bryce Drew. The first thing I would say is I don't think Bryce Drew gets fired if anything happens other than him going winless in conference play. So what is the football equivalent of the basketball team going 0-19 in SEC play last season? I don't know exactly what that is, but let's just say that is the point where it would have to take for Derek Mason to be fired by Malcolm Turner.
If they beat Tennessee again, this is a moot point.
Yeah, I think Mason...
I think no matter what else happens, if they beat Tennessee again, he's back.
I think you're right, and also think of it this way. If they beat UNLV and then lose all of the games up until Kentucky comes to town, and they rally and beat Kentucky, East Tennessee State, and Tennessee, that gives them five wins.
Yep.
And so they fall short, but they would end on the three-game winning streak, having won a couple of quote-unquote rivalry games.
Yep.
And so I think he's 100% back, but it would still be very disappointing to end up 5-7, especially.
I think if that happens, as Darren put it yesterday, it's a yeah, but. That's what it becomes. It goes, you're back, but you have to do this to be back the following year.
Yeah.
The other factor in play here, I guess this is twofold, but it's two things that, in my mind, work together really well. Malcolm Turner, pretty much immediately after coming on board this spring, late winter, February, March, voiced a massive vote of confidence in Derek Mason. And the other big thing that Malcolm Turner has said that relates to football is that football is going to be a big, big part of the master facilities plan that they are working on drafting right now. And presumably, they will begin on by the end of this academic year, I would think. So I think if at all possible, Malcolm Turner would like to give Derek Mason a chance to coach the Vanderbilt football team with at least part of the master facilities plan in place.
I also like the fact that traditionally, Vanderbilt does not have a quick trigger. That's what was so shocking about the Bryce Drew change when it happened. So you do wonder what Malcolm Turner's attitude is going to be going forward. But I do think I like the fact that at Vanderbilt they are more patient than some places. So
I will say this, though, Willie, as we wrap this up, that I understand that Malcolm Turner gave his vote of confidence to Derek Mason, what else? I mean, he kind of had to because he had just signed a contract extension. And he's coming in.
Right.
You know, I'm not trying to create a football versus basketball type thing here, but there is a big difference. I mean, I think he was able to convince the boosters and the administration that, okay, a change was needed at basketball coach, but it's going to be a different conversation with the football coach. And the fact that the outgoing athletic director just gave him a contract extension.
And do not overlook, it seems like you could take this for granted, but I think people like Derek Mason.
Yeah.
He's a classy guy. He's an enthusiastic guy. I think the players enjoy playing for him, and I think that will mean something.
Sure.
Even if they fall short of their goals for this year. But we'll see. You got to play the game. It starts with UNLV on Saturday in a must-win game. When we come back, we'll turn our attention back to the hockey game tonight. We'll tell you what happened at the morning skate. We'll break down the matchup with the San Jose Sharks coming to town. Stay tuned. This is 102.5 The Game.
You know, right now I like where our club is and what our threat is as we come at different teams, because I would have to think, you know, with San Jose tonight, is that they have to make a decision of how they want to play against us, more in terms of who they want to match up. Not that we don't have to think about that, but I'm actually feeling that we have an advantage of not being as concerned with the matchup as maybe San Jose has to be with us. So we'll have to see how that plays out.
That was General Manager David Poile earlier today at Pete and Terry's Tavern at the Sobro entrance of Bridgestone Arena. Predators and the San Jose Sharks tonight. And Chase, building on the point that David Poile said, I watched the Predators from day one, right? So I watched 5 to 7 years, really the first 5 years were like this, where they had to be perfect. They were never going to come in and say, okay, you guys come try to stop us.
Right.
Barry Trotz was, and he was very, very good at it, basically saying, okay, I'm not the better team here, but I'm going to have a very scrappy lineup. We are going to have a defense-first mentality. We're going to be the counterpuncher. We'll find a way to scratch and claw for goals. We're going to have good goaltending. But it was up to them to match up. So Barry Trotz was the master at mixing and matching and finding ways to make it tough on more talented teams. A few years after that, there was a brief window when they had Paul Kariya and yep. Peter Forsberg briefly, Steve Sullivan, Jason Arnott, J.P. Dumont, where they got to a point where the shoe was on the other foot. And I was like, whoo, isn't it nice to be able to show up and have the other team have to come in and say, okay, how do we stop Nashville? They've had that from time to time over the last few years, but this might be really on paper anyway, and it's bore out the first two games anyway, that kind of thing. And that's what David Poile was talking about.
Yep.
It's up to the other team to say, how are we going to stop Johansson's line and Duchesne's line? And then, okay, by the way, here comes Kyle Turris rolling out there. He's pretty good. You know, yeah. And he's got a couple of guys with him that can hurt us here. What do we do about that?
Well, and that's where David Poile has been trying to get this team, you know, they've been trying to get to that point over the last few years. And as I said to him earlier, you know, now for years he coveted a number one center. Now he has two of them. And he's able to, Peter Laviolette is able to put together those two forward lines that it's 1A, 1B. There isn't really a first line, second line, third line, fourth line anymore. It's all about situations, and that's the kind of game that they're trying to play. So they're in a position that, you know, we've seen flashes of, but now, you know, top to bottom, this lineup, I mean, it's talented. Even that what's considered to be, I guess, the fourth line with the Nick Bonino line, I mean, they can produce. I mean, we saw Austin Watson the other day, you know, scored a goal
and they
on
have
his a, back.
They have more of a specific job. And
yep.
I think we talked to Adam Vingert about this. He had the breakdown of ice time and also a very important part of the game that, you know, if you're just there to enjoy the game and you're not really paying that much attention, you may not notice this as much, but the more astute fans have started to pick up on this over the years, I know I have, is where you're deploying some of these lines. Whether you're first line, third line, fourth line, whatever,
yeah.
There are specific roles that each line has, and Nick Bonino's line with Colton Sissons and Austin Watson, they're going to go out there in front of Pecorine, right? They're going to be in the defensive zone starting most of the time. That makes it harder to score, right?
Yep.
But they are more defensive minded, and that is their first purpose. And so that that dictates the ice time you get sometimes, and that dictates the situations you're put in. And so on paper, if that line is even, if they keep the other team's top scorers from scoring, or if they give up one and get one, you like the idea that the other three lines will be plus somewhere. Yeah. You know, and games always get, you know, the special teams play a part. All of these things that go on in a game can change that general philosophy, but in general, that's the role of that line. So they are more or less a checking line. I don't know if I would call them a fourth line traditionally, but it's also hard to call Kyle Turris's line a fourth line. Right,
right? And it's hard to call the Duchesne line the second line. It's hard to call the Johansson line the second line. I mean, it just the traditional way of
talking
about it. And I think
Laviolette's had some fun with that, right?
He's chuckling
at that because it's a good position to be in.
He said to he said to Joe Rexroad the other day that, that Joe Rexroad was asking him about the Duchesne line because Peter Laviolette goes, which one's the second line? He goes, the Duchesne line. He goes, they're going to be pissed off if you keep calling them the second line. So, that's the whole point. That's where they tried to get to, of having multiple top lines and being able to get that, you know, secondary scoring and tertiary scoring, as David Boyle brought up today. So, and I think they're at that point now where they have the talent in which they can, you know, they haven't mixed and matched too much yet, but they can. You know, and eventually they're going to get to that point where, okay, teams are going to start to figure out the, you know, some of these lines and how they're currently constructed. Or, you know, Kyle Turris the other night, we saw him play a really solid hockey game. He didn't score, but he had some chances and he was right there in front of the net. As he continues to, you know, find his confidence and develop his game even more, it's going to give you yet another piece that you can use on some of these forward lines as you want to mix and match. So I really like the games that I'm seeing out of, and I know it's only two games in, but I even go back to the preseason and training camp. I like what I'm seeing from Kyle Turris. I like what I'm seeing from Nick Bonino. I think that they have some depth that is really being shown right now.
They've invested heavily. If you look at what they're paying their four centers,
it's
a lot of money. They should be getting, but they're getting good play. The key will be to balance, right? Offensive push. Offensively, it's been there, but the defensive balance was lacking. In the last game, they got counterattacked, but they're also playing a much different team tonight, a more talented team, even though it's been a little bit banged up. Evander Kane comes back tonight for the Sharks. They're 0-3. They're going to be desperate. They are going to have a lot of edge to their game tonight. They're not happy with how things have gone. This is going to be a great test.
Yeah.
It's the best team the Predators have played so far, including the training camp.
But I think they need that. They need a big test like that. And, you know, you brought something up, too, of they're paying a lot of money down the middle for center. The thing that I do like that this organization is doing right now, and it starts with David Poile that they're looking at, they've signed some guys to some big contracts. They've, you know, dished out a lot of money. But they're putting the players in the best possible position to help them win. They're not thinking, well, you know, just because we're paying Kyle Turris $6 million, I mean, he needs to be on the second line or whatever you want to call it. No, they're putting Kyle Turris in his natural position of center with two guys that are going to work together as a cohesive unit and be a pretty good second line, third line, whatever you want to call it. I mean, that's what they're doing, and that's what I like seeing.
So tonight at 7 o'clock will be the face-off. It's on NBC Sports tonight. You can hear our radio coverage, as always, 6 o'clock start for our pregame show. And Hal and Pete have the call starting at 7 o'clock, Predators and Sharks. Stay tuned. Our final segment, which it will include a drawing for tickets tonight's game from here at Pete and Terry's Tavern. We have some late entries, which is good. Anybody else want to get a late entry in there? Do it right now because we're going to draw our next pair here in just a moment. We'll also hit on some news and notes for the day, maybe a final Titans thought or two as well in our final segment. That's coming up just around the corner here on 102.5 The Game. And welcome back to the final segment of today's show, Darren, Donick, and Chase. And once again, the Darren update. Out of surgery, out of the hospital.
He's home.
Back home, recovering from the scope or the meniscus repair.
Yeah, the repair.
So thumbs up from his wife, Lauren. So
will he have the Willis Reed moment?
You'll have to wait and see.
He gets rolled in at 5:59.
We know this. We have just drawn for our second of four pairs of tickets tonight from Pete and Terry's Tavern. If you did not get your name in, you can still do that. The last giveaway will be at 4:45.
There will be drawings at 3:45 and 4:45 during Jared and the GM. You have to come down to Pete and Terry's Tavern, which is outside the Sobro entrance at Bridgestone Arena. Put your name in the hat. You do not have to be present to win, but you do have to come and sign up, and then we will draw and leave your tickets at will call. You'll be contacted by our awesome promotions department, and they will let you know that you won. But with that said, Willie, we have drawn a name, and it is as follows.
Yes,
if I can speak.
Winner number two, Jose Alea from here in Nashville. Congratulations to Jose.
There you go.
Is he here?
No.
Oh, we don't know. I thought you were making eye contact with Jose out on the patio here, but no, I guess
he's not.
But his name will be a will call. Jose, if you're listening, we will get in touch with you. And if you did not win, no fear.
It's okay.
You still got a shot.
Two more chances.
You got two more shots to come to the game tonight. And we're going to be doing this from time to time with our shows on game day. So if you didn't get down today, keep this in mind for future game day.
As Eddie Money said, we got two tickets to paradise.
Two tickets to paradise. No question. So, Chase, there was a fan that came by and dropped his name in the hat who is here for a conference, and he happens to be a Buffalo Bills fan. And he was like, what about the fans from the Bills? And that is one thing. I know you guys hit on it a little bit yesterday. We didn't talk about it today much, but I was not at the game. But in talking to some people that were, there's no question that it had to be disappointing for, you know, Mike Vrabel and the Titans players to have – it was an influence. I don't know what the number was or percentage or anything like that, but the Bills fans influenced what was going on in the field.
Well,
fair to say?
Yeah.
As you can. Like, in this day and age, we know in the NFL, the road team is winning a lot, right? It's not like there's this huge home field advantage in the NFL. Even at a place like Lambeau Field where you don't have a lot of fans from the other team in there, the road teams can win. But as far as the atmosphere, just from a front office, from a morale standpoint, the Titans still have not made much progress in creating a good home field atmosphere. And we've been saying for a long time, when ticket brokers own a lot of the tickets, they end up in the other team's hands more often than not, because the other team's fans, they're coming in for the weekend, they'll pay what they need to pay. As soon as the schedule comes out, they're making the plans. We're going to Nashville on this weekend when my team is there. You have a rabid fan base that is hungry. Like the Bills.
Right.
And they also, fair to say, drank a lot of beer.
They do.
While they were here.
They've been known to do that. You know what else I saw? That I saw it on Twitter. That for the life of me, I cannot figure this out. Why Nissan Stadium and the Titans can't figure this out. People in line. They're going to miss kickoff because they can't get in the stadium.
Yep.
And I understand. Okay. You got bag check and we got safety standards.
Did you say bag check?
Bag check. Not Chuck. Not
okay,
Chuck.
I'm sorry. Yeah,
I mean, hey, they might move faster if they let them chuck some bags. But
is all about speed. The opposite of what we're doing.
It's all
here.
About efficiency and speed. I just don't understand. You know, they have new security measures here at Bridgestone Arena. I'm looking at the Sobro entrance right now. They have express lane, X-ray lane. If you have a bag, you have to go through the X-ray lane, which I do every time I come in because I'm media and I bring my backpack.
Right.
You know how long it takes? I'm through that line probably in less than a minute.
Because not everybody is funneled through that line.
No,
It's systematic.
Exactly.
Right?
You have the express lane
where it's organized and they think ahead of, okay, how do we get people through efficiently?
What is so damn hard about that?
Well, why are we still – we've been talking about this for 5 years.
That's my point. Why are we still talking about this?
That is what I keep coming back to is I always ask the question every summer, what's going to be different this year? And I know that they have made – some efforts in some areas, but it's still way behind where I think it can be.
Yep.
And what the team deserves, what the players deserve when they go out there. There's a lot to go there. Now, I know Chris has been waiting patiently on the line with us. He wants to talk about another thing that we have not covered today that I'm sure you guys went through a lot yesterday. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Fine,
doing
thanks.
Well.
I just wanted to call and talk to you guys about, honestly, there's a plethora of things I could call and complain about this Titans team, but the one thing that's sticking out to me is Vrabel, and it really hit home last Sunday with his fourth down call. Since his first year, he's almost made it a point to show everybody that he's going to be the guy that's not afraid to go for it on fourth down or to go for the two-point conversion. And he had the situation in Atlanta where you can kick a field goal to go up by three scores, but he decides to go for it. And it blows my mind that this past Sunday you have a kicker who's 0 for 3 on field goals, It wasn't even close on two of them, and he decides to throw him out there for a 53-yarder when even if you make it, you're in the same position that you would be if you missed it. You have to score a touchdown to give you a chance to win the game.
Right.
Do we need to hire somebody to come in and that Vrabel can defer to on fourth down decisions? I mean, this is
okay, Chris. Because we're running short on time, I want to answer your question. It's a good question. So we're going to let you go on that. Thanks for calling. It was an odd reversal of having a little more faith in kicking, but it comes down to me, Chase, once again, for not having the ability. Some coaches, I think, are better than others, but if you're not this way, then how do you balance that? Maybe have somebody in the press box that is really focusing on situations like this where a coach can say, what do you think?
Yeah.
Because I think it was pretty – I don't know if it was unanimous, but it was a – if you were to vote, like, you know, what do you think the Titans should do here? Go for it or kick the field goal? I think you would have had at least 80 to 85% of the people would say, got to go for it here.
Yeah.
Right? I know I was.
Yeah.
And I was certainly not alone. That question was one of the first questions.
When Santos walked out there for the 53-yarder, I'm like, what are you doing? Like, why?
Well, you just didn't have a good feeling that he was going to make the field goal.
But even in that point of the game, though, you have to think, okay, I need a touchdown, so let's go for it.
So we've established that most people are going to say, so what is keeping – where was that person on the Titans to say, Mike?
He doesn't have one.
Because he has made, I think, the consensus opposite choice for a number of different times since he's been the coach. And I think it comes down to emotion versus what are your percentages? What is the rational percentages? So I think that's a point of self-evaluation for him, and it's no different this week than it was last week. We were talking about it last week when they went for it on fourth and one.
We got to go, but he was asked yesterday by Teron Davenport, does he have an analytics person?
Yeah.
That's a great question. And he basically was like, well, we have scouts and we have assistants. He basically doesn't. He doesn't have an analytics person. And so he needs an advisor of some sort.
You need the equivalent of the two-point chart.
Yep.
Right? You need when to go for it, when to not go for it. There's got to be some further discussion there. So they'll have a different kicker kicking the next time they make that.
I have a feeling we get that official news maybe later today. Yep.
All right. We're done. Jared and the GM coming up next from here on the Sobro side. Bridgestone Arena, Predators and Sharks later on tonight. We'll see you there. Join us tomorrow for Darren, Donick, and Chase.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.